FlyPod.com, I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Today we have the author of his brand new book. It's titled Buried in Time. Jim D. Miller is the author. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
You know, this book, really an interesting book, and there's not a book I like better than a book that pretty much goes back in time. Back in time to a different place. And that's exactly, Jim, what your book does.
Yes. Years ago in the 80s, I saw a film with Kirk Douglas that was called The Final Countdown, and it was about an aircraft carrier that went back in time to ride around the Pearl Harbor day, and that kind of stuck in my mind, and later when I was on this, I thought about that.
Well, this book takes place in Egypt, back what, a few thousand years?
It goes back 3,000 years to the time of Akhenaten, a little over 3,000 years.
Why a book that goes back to Egypt during the time of kings?
Well, this here's Akhenaten was a very controversial pharaoh, and Egypt has just always fascinated me. To me, their history is forever changing because they are digging up new things every year, and you'll see all these experts. I had to laugh. You'll have one arguing, saying, well, Nefertiti was the mother of Tutankhamun. And then you'll have some other guy, oh, no, it was one of her daughters was. And, you know, it's hard to say exactly what happened over 3,000 years ago. Also, this fit in with the character that I wanted to do. It follows in because Akhenaten's queen was Nefertiti, and she disappears from the history books, actually, in the 12th year of his reign. And there is some dispute over who was queen, whether it was an unknown or whether it was one of Nefertiti's daughters or who. That's the biggest reason. And plus, it just my passion for Egypt's always been there. I love it.
Well, you've been to Egypt quite a few times. Is that correct? You've been around. You've looked at tombs. You've even been places where people really don't go.
Right. I was really fortunate to go with four other people from the Rotary one year. We got into places that the average person wouldn't be able to go and see things that the average person wouldn't be able to see. I tried to incorporate it into the book. Everything that is fictional, it is more believable if you can add more truth to it, shall we say. So the boat like that I use in there, his big boat, I kind of fashioned it over the actual funerary boat of Khufu, which is right beside his big pyramid. We got to be within just a few feet of that. You couldn't touch it. It is huge and massive. They dug it up. I fashioned the boat in my book from that, basically. So to bring out that, got into tombs. Oh, like one thing, there are the fan bearer, you know, we always see the pharaoh sitting on his tomb with usually a young person with ostrich feather fan over him, you know, because it was quite warm. Well, one of the tombs I went into showed this boy that had been a fan bearer for the pharaoh, and they buried him with his mother, which was a queen. And I says, well, why? I would have thought he would have had a slave or something. And they said, no, that they actually wanted someone of their family, a nephew, a cousin, something like that. So if they overheard anything, it was kept in the family.
When I'm watching television and other things, how fictional can you be with that? And they put in a lot of things to make it look really good. But I see women feeding the pharaoh grapes. Did that actually ever happen?
Yes, but women back in that day had a lot, shall we say, freedom, but they actually did feed the pharaoh. He was a god. He was the apotheosis of the whole of Egypt. And women actually could get a divorce. They could actually even own property in ancient Egypt. Women's deal was quite a bit ahead of its time, but they do feed the pharaoh everything. He is treated just like a god. How well can you treat a god? You do everything they say or everything they want.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize that they could get a divorce like that.
Yes, I read up quite a bit on it, and I was really fascinated myself, the rights that they had in those days, that they could also get a divorce. I was kind of shocked with that, but I thought, well, that's great, you know.
Well, let's take a look at your book, Buried in Time. We have Captain Jamie Cole, and she's scrambling in her jet. And it's a fighter. I believe it's an F-117A. And all of a sudden, there's something that looks maybe like blackbirds or something spinning around. And she wants to leave where she's going and kind of check out what all the darkness is spinning around. Is that kind of correct?
Well, it's a cloud that she sees up above that is really different looking. It has like electricity sparking inside of it and stuff. She heads into that. The plane she's with, the other captain tells her not to, but she was kind of a strong-willed person. I'll be right back. And when she flies into that cloud, it comes close to killing her. But when she comes out the other side, her and a fully armed stealth fighter are over 3,000 years back in time. That sets the basis for this story.
You know, I could tell you a lot about this book, but I don't want to give anything away, really, that would keep somebody from getting your book, Buried in Time. I think that it was very easy to get into, and you really bring this thing to life. Is it because you've been to Egypt, that you've looked around, you've been there, you know what's there? How did you bring this thing to life so well?
Like I say, being there, Egypt has always been my passion. Plus, I had been in the Air Force before. In the 60s, I'm right now 75 years old, but in the 60s, jets had only been around for a little over 10 years, and we had heard rumors of stealth fighters at that time, but there weren't any. I actually think they must have been working on it at that time or either had them. And when I saw my first stealth fighter, it fascinated me. So I thought, what would it be to send something like that back into an ancient time? What would it happen? And then Jamie also is a modern day warrior. She's a well-trained soldier. She has an impact, as you know, on that society too. I don't want to give away too much either, but it does draw you in right off the bat. I had a friend that I loaned the manuscript before I ever had it published to. I said, just check it out and see. And it was one of those, she said she was going to read it, kept saying she was going to read it. Finally, I said, I'll be over in a day or two. Just read the first 20 pages. I want to ask you a question. When I showed up that Saturday morning, she was, you son of a gun. And I said, what's the matter? She hadn't started reading it till the night before. And she sat up all night long to read it. So I guess it pulls you right in.
Yeah, this is one of those books, and, you know, it's kind of nice to have a book like this where it doesn't take you any time at all to take yourself into the book, to take yourself back in time, back to ancient Egypt. I mean, you know, you read that, you could actually believe that you are actually watching that, that you're sitting there watching the king as he has been... he's been to war, which kings actually did, and here's Jamie trying to heal him. I think that Egypt probably knew he wasn't going to live.
Yes, he actually knew that at the time, and with their knowledge of medicine at that time, he wouldn't have. You know, you have to read the book to see how she cures him, but women back in that time, they did have doctors. They did way more than we normally would think of. They even had some records of brain surgery by the doctors back then, if you can believe it. Whether they cured anybody or just drilled a hole in their head, I'm not sure, but they did have that. It was quite the thing for him to go through that.
Jim, I want to ask you how this book, Buried in Time, came about.
My wife and I, we owned a business, dealt with the public, and I let her kind of take the flack of dealing with the public, and I says, I didn't like that. I went driving truck. I would drive, and I just thought about Egypt, and I'd at the end of the evening, I'd sit down and write a little bit rather than go in and visit or what at the coffee shops. I'd sit in my truck and write down what I thought about. Finally, one day I told her, I says, Margaret, I've started writing this book. I think it's pretty good. If you get a chance, I left some papers at home there. Why don't you take a look at it, see what you think? Well, never heard anything until finally one day I was clear in Seattle. I get this call. Said, Jim, I started your book. I love it. You know, I read the first 70 pages. Where's the rest? I kind of chuckled. And I says, that's great. That's all I've written so far.
It's almost like maybe for her, an author that wrote a book, and now she has to wait for the second one that might be a continuation, huh?
That's it.
And when you were writing this book, how difficult is that for you to know what the story is? Now, did you know what you were going to write in the beginning? Did you maybe have maybe a middle you were going to go to, or did you know what the ending might be?
Well, I pretty much had the ending in my mind to begin with. And during the whole book, as you know, there is pretty much action nonstop all the way through, which in ancient history, there was a lot of wars and chariot battles and other things in actual history as there is today. I actually had the end of the book in my thoughts when I started in and the people in it. I did change a few of the names. The names, for instance, normally in ancient Egypt meant something. Akhenaten meant spirit of Aton, which is a being, a sun god. Queen Hepsut meant foremost of noble women. And Queen Nefertiti meant the beautiful one has come. Well, these names all meant something. So I went and actually looked up the language and through the hieroglyphics, which we can now read, the Sharakum is what Jamie changed her name to, or they started calling her. That actually stands for one who rides on eagles. Benyamet, which they started calling the stealth fighter, actually in ancient Egypt, name would have meant blackbird of death. So I tried to keep it as close to, even though it's fantasy, you try to keep as many things as natural and as true as you can.
You know, even though, Jim, it's fantasy, would you consider this something like historical fiction?
Slightly, yes, because of like Akhenaten's queen actually disappears, Nefertiti, from the history books, like I said, in the 12th year of his reign. They do know that he had another chief queen. There is dispute between them who was the mother of Tutankhamun, whether it was Nefertiti, whether it was a daughter of hers, or some other woman. Due to this being 3,000 years ago, I tried to blend this in and use as much of this as I could to bring out things like that. So there is that. The places I talk about are actual places in Egypt. Thebes is actually Luxor, the Temple of Luxor, the Temple of Karnak. I've been in them all, and I tried to describe them as close as I could. Waters up by Alexandria, the Nile, I tried to give it as true a depiction as I could. That helps bring a little bit more of it, I think, to light. Some of the women, well, in ancient Egypt, you have Queen Hepsut, Queen Cleopatra. They were quite influential. I wanted to have a woman that would fit right in with them. They were quite high up in Egypt, and there were so many pharaohs. There was over 170 pharaohs in Egypt. I picked the most controversial one in my eyes was Akhenaten to make this story around. His art, his shape, everything he did, he was wanting to bring one single god about rather than all these other gods into Egypt, and he fought a lot of, or caught a lot of flack on that. It was just a tough deal for him to do. So I think that I'm hoping I did a good job with it.
I won't disagree with you at all. I thought you did a fantastic job. When you went through the pyramids, through the temples, I'm sure they had these drawings. I mean, I've never been to Egypt or anything, but I've seen on the walls dogs as humans and other things. When you're there, do you feel like perhaps there might have been people there from a different time, maybe a different planet?
Well, I don't actually believe that they were from anybody from a different planet. I do think in certain things that they were so far ahead of their time. It's like Khufu's pyramid is aligned perfectly east and west, north and south, things like this, and how they do that, how they could do certain things. We just haven't wrapped our mind around it. And I think at that time, somehow, they had this figured out. I don't believe there was. The drawings and stuff in there, some people, they debate over whether it was alien help or what. You'd almost think so when you think that Khufu's pyramid, when you get close to it, you actually see how tall something like that is. It is not one football field, but if you took that 100 yards, a football field and a little over half of another one high, and how do you get thousands of stones that weigh thousands of pounds up that high? It boggles the mind what they could actually do. And when you go inside them also, it does.
When you look at the pyramids, and again, I've only seen them on television and movies and as such, the blocks of stone look so big, they would have had to have gone someplace to quarry those stones, if you will. Could they have done it there? Could the sands have come in and maybe washed over where they were digging?
Well, what they did, as far as we can figure out, they were quarried in a different place. Then those blocks were put on barges. And then at the time when the Nile was flooding, the water come closer to where the giant pyramids are right now. And then they unloaded them. And as near as I can tell, they had to have probably built up sand and stone to drag them up as high as they could. And that's, but they were quarried at different places and brought there through the Nile. The Nile actually flows to the north. So when you're looking at Egypt, they say Upper and Lower Egypt. Upper Egypt is in the south and Lower Egypt's in the north. It's backwards to our way of thinking.
Buried in Time, your first book, what were the challenges with writing this book for you?
The people. I wanted to get the people as accurate as I could, but I didn't want it to interfere with other parts of history. For instance, Akhenaten's army commander. That is Mahu. That's what I named him. In real life, Akhenaten's commander was Horneb. Horneb was also the army commander of Tutankhamun and Aya, and he later became a pharaoh himself. So I did not use his actual name. I didn't want to drag this into a whole nother story, shall we say, with him as a central character. He plays such a good part in this book, I think, that I had to have him focused not with being going on to be a pharaoh or what, but just to being an army commander and who at times was in conflict with Jaime.
Jim, how much power did that pharaoh have as opposed to the high priest, or was there a lot of fighting back and forth for that power?
Akhenaten, his high priest, and I used that actual name, was Panchisi. And he was the high priest of Aten for Akhenaten. But the high priests of the other gods before Akhenaten took it over were really kind of at odds with him, and they held tremendous power. They were as close to the what the pharaoh's power was. If priest said something, it was like law also. And he kind of took a lot of that power away from him. Once he passed away, the other priests quickly moved to get Tutankhamun to reinstate all the other gods and priests, so they got their power back. So they're pretty powerful. A vizier was just kind of a advisor and also their army commanders. They took a lot of information from their army commanders, too. In those days, if you didn't have any children, there was over 170 pharaohs in ancient Egypt. If you didn't have any children as a pharaoh, the army commander, if you died, he usually took over as pharaoh. Everybody wanted to be pharaoh. In fact, Alexander the Great made himself pharaoh. I was in the room that he crowned himself pharaoh of Egypt in. Things like that. Everybody wanted to be pharaoh, I guess.
So would you say there was probably some infighting between the high priest and the pharaohs?
I think there probably was, especially during Akhenaten's time, from what I can read between the lines in the history books. He started the city of Amarna, which they just discovered a few years back. One reason why it was so hard to discover, it was almost leveled. So afterwards, the priests and other pharaohs literally wiped out the city that he had built when he was pharaoh, and now they're just first really excavating it. So I think there was quite a bit of conflict there, and that he had probably more than the average pharaoh because of trying to take the power away from them and the other gods.
Okay, Jim, I've got a couple questions here. Is this your last book? Is there going to be a second part of Buried in Time? Are you going to have another book? And how do we get this book?
Okay, I'm right now about a third, quarter to a third of the way through a sequel to the first book. And I'm hoping it'll be as good as the first. I've been tickled pink with the first one, how it's been doing. You can get it at Amazon or you can get it at Kindle. The other way, if a person wants a personalized copy, they can also email me. My email is mellerjim266@gmail.com. It's a standard size book, and it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, you know, Buried in Time, one of my favorite books here. I mean, we're going back in time. We're going back to Egypt, to the time of the pharaohs. Here comes this F-117A jet fighter. It's a stealth fighter and lands. What do these people think? Is Captain Jamie Cole going to make it out alive? How does she come back? Does she come back? Well, you have to check out Buried in Time by Jim D. Miller. Jim, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mark.
You've been listening to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Jim D. Miller, author of his brand new book, Buried in Time.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.